Get ready to conquer the post-vacation letdown with special guest Dr. Emily King on today's Family Vacationer podcast. Stay tuned for valuable tips and strategies to keep that vacation glow alive. Episode 127 starts right now.
Welcome to the Family Vacationer with Rob and Danny.
Rob and Danny,
the go-to podcast for families on the move.
Welcome, friends. I'm Rob.
And I'm Danny.
And this is episode 127 of the Family Vacationer. We hope your summer's gotten off to a good start and glad that you're with us for this episode. It may pay off as you vacation this summer. Now, last week, we had Carol Peck on the show from Beyond Times Square to talk about families traveling to New York City. Tons and tons of really good information on that show, including a Home Alone tour package that Beyond Times Square does during the holidays that I would really love to take my kids on. So definitely check that out. Today, we're going to talk about one of life's more unpleasant feelings. We've all felt it. It's that feeling when you return home from an amazing vacation and suddenly reality sets in, right? And you find yourself missing that excitement, the relaxation that you experienced while you were on vacation.
Absolutely, Rob. You can. And we know that families often struggle with this post-vacation blues. So we're really thrilled to have Dr. Emily King here to shed some light on the topic and also provide some valuable insights on how to manage it. This is Dr. Emily's third visit to the show, and we're glad to have her back. Dr. Emily is a child psychologist, a former school psychologist, and she spent the last 20 years working with neurodivergent children, along with their parents and teachers, to build an understanding of how a child's development skills, relationships, and perception of safety intersect to create the ideal environment for their growth.
Dr. Emily, welcome back to the show.
Yes, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me again.
So I want to kick things off by asking you, how can parents recognize the signs of post-vacation letdown in their neurodivergent children?
Well, first, let's talk about what post-vacation letdown is. Mm-hmm. This is a term that I totally made up. It is not a clinical term. However, I think we can all relate to the feeling of, it's really like a mini grief of like saying goodbye to your vacation. And it's a wave of emotion that we all get when we're leaving our vacation and heading back to reality. And it feels like a letdown, a bummer, like whatever your kid wants to call it or your family wants to call it. Mm-hmm. And I've noticed over time when I travel with my own kids who are neurodivergent as well in their own ways, that it's just a little bit more intense with them. So it's similar to everybody's emotion, but I think it's hard sometimes for kids to visualize, well, when are we ever going to vacation again? Or this was the best vacation ever, and I'm just so sad that it's done. So that roller coaster of emotions is what to look for. And then because it's somewhat more intense, if your child is on the autism spectrum or has ADHD or their emotions are sensitive due to anxiety, you might see restless sleep the night before. You might see dysregulated behavior. Those are all things that just your kid might be off a little bit, and that would be completely expected given the emotional experience of transitioning back to the real world.
Okay, so are the signs different then for neurotypical children?
Not necessarily. I would just say that you may not notice it. You're in your neurotypical children. They may just be more flexible. They may go with the flow more. They may be like a little grumpy, but go along with everything. Or their mood might just not last. Their moodiness might not last as long. Or they may be able to tell you what's going on. You know, there are lots of kids. Neurotypical kids can just say like, this stinks. This is a great vacation. I don't want to go back to school, you know? And then you know what's going on with them if they're a little moody. But sometimes our neurodivergent kids have communication weaknesses or emotional regulation weaknesses. And we have to recognize that some of the behaviors we're seeing are related to their mood and also their ability to feel disappointed and tell us about it at the same time, which is hard.
Yeah.
I've noticed in my ADHD child that he has a difficult time articulating emotion, much more than my youngest. So I completely stole one of your lines from our previous shows. You know, it's okay to be mad. It's not okay to be mean. So we use that over and over, but what are some effective strategies for supporting our neurodivergent children as they transition from vacation to home?
Yeah, so let's just assume that we need a little bit more time. That's the number one strategy. When you're planning your vacation, think about how much time your kid needs to shift gears. Think about the opposite. Think about when you're, you know, going somewhere, how long does it take them to settle in? If it's a day, then let's recognize that they might need a day at home before they go back into a school week. So that extra day, I think a lot of us have figured that out the more that we travel. For parents, we need it for laundry and grocery shopping, but it's really helpful for our kids to have kind of a regular routine Saturday or Sunday at home before Monday. I think that it's really hard for kids, especially if you're coming in from a different time zone, really hard for kids to go straight from vacation to school. It's just it's pretty jarring, I think, for them. Another strategy would be, as you are transitioning back to the real world or leaving vacation, go ahead and start talking about your next vacation. You may not know where it's going to be. You may not know when it's going to be, but just start brainstorming, because I think that kids with executive functioning weaknesses, so lots of kids with ADHD that are very in the moment, they're not really forward thinking about the next time. They might get stuck in thinking about how sad they are that this vacation's over. And I know we're talking about, you know, privileged first world problems here, right? So, just start brainstorming to buffer that feeling that they might have of, oh, I'm sad to leave this vacation. And it might be a discussion of, what did you like about this? What did you not like about this? What do you not want to repeat next time we do this? Maybe we want to travel in a different way. Maybe we want to go to the exact same beach place again, you know, whatever it is that they liked. To get their feedback can help distract them also and help them look forward to something else. So time and then distraction. And I also think it's really, really helpful to just let them rest. I think we've got to remember that, I mean, this goes with time, but we've got to remember that vacations, I call them family field trips. They're not necessarily restful. And especially if we're going somewhere like Universal or Disney, it's a lot on a kid's sensory system or on their imagination, like the different world that, I mean, if they've been in Harry Potter world for a few days and you're asking them to go to school the next day, like that is really, they're going to be exhausted from all the, even if it was fun. And I think one thing we do a lot that we kind of forget about is that having fun also takes energy. So we've got to remember that even though we had this awesome time, we've got to give our kids a little bit of rest before going back into life. And that's also where the time component comes in as well.
Okay.
Yeah, so I think traveling with the extended family too can also, because you're with other families who may parent differently and, you know, that may be something that the kids have to adjust to as well. Let me ask you this. So if you're road tripping, let's say, you know, cause we go down to Disney, we'll drive a lot of the time or all the time. If we try to hit some things on the way back, would that be in the line of distracting them, or would that just kind of push the transition time back a little bit? Would that be helpful or not so much?
It depends on your kid. I think you don't want to eat into the transition time you get at home. The one I'm the transition time I'm thinking about with rest is like when your car hits your driveway to when they have to go to school. That's like the time frame of rest and emotional regroup. But if 2 6-hour drives are going to be more restful than 1 12-hour drive, that's just going to be better for everybody. I mean, we could probably do a whole episode on car rides, but. Yes. You know your kid, and if it is going to be taxing on everyone emotionally and they're not going to sleep well, if you try to go straight for us in North Carolina, it's, you know, Florida is like anywhere between 9 and 12 hours, depending on where you're going. Yeah. And it can be done in one day, but it doesn't have to be done in one day. We've certainly broken up trips before to make them more fun and make it all kind of part of the trip.
Yeah. All right. So how can parents help children regulate their emotional side during the post-vacation letdown?
Yeah. So one thing, some of this is thinking about the next vacation, but also let's say they are, they're sad and they're missing what they did, or missing a cousin, or missing a person that they, you know, spent so much great time with. That's when we can start helping them, you know, write down or draw pictures or put together scrapbooks or Shutterfly books of their memories, because this is something that, especially kids with memory weaknesses or attention weaknesses, I have worked with kids who, I mean, we all know that, like, kids with autism really like social stories. They think in pictures often, not all of them, but often they're visual learners, and it helps them sequence through what they did, because so much of a vacation can be overwhelming from a sensory standpoint, and from just the place you're staying is different, the places you're going are different, and while that all might be exciting and worth it to a child, emotionally that can be overwhelming. So I think it's really great to help them organize the pictures. So you might have a child join you to go through all the pictures from the vacation and put them all in order, or make a Shutterfly book together, or you know, you can use anything, doesn't have to be Shutterfly, that's what we use in my family, but you know you can help them organize their memories to help them realize that just because we're gone from the vacation, we're not there anymore, doesn't mean that it didn't happen or our memories aren't there. You know, I've worked with so many kids over the years that will bring in pictures to show me, or their parents will say, every time they get sad, they open up this book and they look through all these memories of this time where we, you know, Universal or wherever it is, or at the beach. And they become little stories that can bring happiness to your kid later on. So I think there's a lot you can do to help them reconnect with the memories of the vacation. And then, you know, overall, we just want to help them get back into a routine. The most regulating thing for children is routine and connection with their safe person. So it also could be that, you know, I think we all have our own vacation letdown when we come back. We've all feel like we're out of money and we're out of rest and we're out of patience and like all those things. So we also need that time to sleep and regulate before we go back to work. And you have to remember that your kid also needs you to help them get into a routine and to have these conversations and to kind of show up with that energy to work through any of the sadness that they're having. But just to show up for our kids and be that connected, safe person to talk through anything they're feeling in that time is a good way to regulate.
You mentioned routines. So are there any specific routines or activities that can be helpful in easing the transition? You mentioned the scrapbook, picture book. So as a travel agent, I think I mentioned this to you. Mm-hmm. That's what I've started giving my clients as a thank you, you know, for letting me plan your vacation, because I feel like it does kind of bring all the memories back together and they get to kind of pick and choose and organize that. That's a good activity. Any other things that you would recommend?
Yeah, that's a good one for just like every kid knowing that they can do that for, that's like a trip routine. Like we go on a trip and then we get to make a memory book about it. The things I think of in terms of routine will sound boring, but they're boring because they're, you know, they're regulating for kids. So, you know, especially neurodivergent kids often need a lot of structure. They need predictability. They may feel disorganized and inattentive, and we need to anchor them again in their life, right? After this, like, whatever, you know, I feel like vacations and travel, it's so, you're so untethered. You're just like doing whatever. So if we're going to have a hope of getting them back into their routine, we've got to kind of anchor them at home. So think about, that's why I always say, come back a day early. Think about what a regular Sunday is for your family and do that regular Sunday and help shift their mindset into, we're just in a routine day. This now feels like a day before I go back to school and doesn't feel like a, you know, everything's all over the floor because we're still unpacking and we have nothing to eat because we haven't been home in a week and all those things. That can be dysregulating to a child to have a chaotic home right before they go back into the week. And all of our homes are chaotic when we get back from vacation. True, all of them. Like we got to get the dog and we got to get food and it's all, you know, nothing's clean. Yeah, all of that.
Yeah,
for sure.
All right, you may have hit on this already a little bit, but what role do the predictable patterns and the schemas play in helping the neurodivergent children cope with those feelings coming back from vacation?
Yeah, so I often, speaking specifically about autistic children, mm-hmm. they're visual learners, they often think in patterns, and if we can lean into that and give them a helpful pattern to think about, they usually have a pattern about school, and once they're in the school building, back to their routine, assuming that school's going well for them, and then maybe they have, if you are taking an autistic child on vacation, you probably have a vacation routine, and so it can be helpful to have this transition routine. Maybe it's that whole weekend between vacation and school, but you could even expand it to you know, a child, let's say, I'm just making this up, but let's say you have an in-town grandparent that they really missed while they've been out of town. They could go hang out with that grandparent while parents do all the laundry, all the, you know, shopping, like all the things that the family needs to get done. And that could help distract the child from leaving vacation of like, oh, I get to spend the afternoon with my grandparent. And then parents get everything done. So things like that, that you can strategically think about helping your child have, you know, some sort of transition plan that is just a new routine. We're coming back into town, so let's do this, and we can do this every time. So they have something maybe to look forward to if transition is really hard coming back into town.
So is it more difficult or is it easier, do you think, when you take a vacation in summer and you don't have school? Obviously, parents have work when they come back, but with not having school, does that make it easier or more difficult to transition back?
So this was such an issue over COVID, right? So we were all like, what day is it? Every day is Saturday. I don't know. So kids really struggled with this. It just reminds me of COVID because we had to basically convince them, I know you're in the house, but today's a school day and today's a home day. Like, we have to define this for them sometimes during the summer. So many kids go to day camps while parents work. There usually are some sort of summer structures, but for some older kids, there are not. And I highly recommend for kids, you know, with ADHD or kids that need a lot of structure, even if they don't need supervision, just so they're not on screens all day. You know, some screens are fun and okay, but we want them to be outside moving their body, swimming, being with their friends, riding scooters and bikes, if those are whatever's enjoyable to them. So I think it can be helpful to have some structure after a vacation, but then a different family may say, you know what, we need a whole week at home after we go to Universal or Disney. And that would be fine too. Like, whatever your kid needs. I've worked with lots of kids that probably could not go to a new day camp on Monday after going to Disney the week before. That's a big ask, right? Mm-hmm. So if there's anything that's brand new, thinking about, that's a lot for a kid, any kid to process, but especially a kid who might be socially anxious or might not know the plan or might need a little extra support. We would want to make that week before going back into something pretty routine, which probably wouldn't be a vacation.
Yes, you need a vacation from your vacation, right?
Exactly.
So how can parents manage the sadness or dysregulation that their children may experience during that middle period after returning from the vacation?
Yeah, again, I think we just need to structure this as much as possible. So
okay.
Whatever works for your kid. So some kids, think about what your kid misses when they're on vacation. And that can sometimes help you build in, like, do they miss a neighborhood friend? Or like, do they miss an extended family member that's in town? Or did they actually miss something about school that they're looking forward to? Anything that they missed while they were on vacation that they want to go back to, we can amp that up a little bit and really put a spin on that and say, oh, it's going to be so nice to get back into the week. And you get to see your piano teacher, or you get to go to Taekwondo again. And we didn't get to go while we were gone. I mean, no, it's not, you know, riding boogie boards in the ocean, but it's still fun.
So is there an ideal amount of time for transitioning and processing the whole post-vacation mood, or will that vary from child to child?
It, like everything else, it totally varies child to child, and family to family. So, you know, as we all know, we all have a bunch of different kids in our family. No two are alike, right?
No.
Yeah.
And so we have to balance that with the family, and usually allowing enough time for the kid in our family who needs the most amount of time, you know, so not rushing that kid because the other ones probably could go to school without sleeping the next day. You know, we've all got kids with different abilities and skills. So there really isn't an amount of time. I would say that a good rule of thumb is to have a weekend between like a week vacation and starting the week. Some families are just fine with one day. But some, like I said, could even need a whole week to not do a big vacation back to back with something. And so that would be the reason that many families do week long vacations in the summer, so that it's not, because spring break is obviously going to be like right up against, even holiday break is usually right up against going back to school.
Yeah.
So we've mentioned Disney Universal Studios several times. And we talk a lot on the show about Disney and Universal Studios and the Disney bubble and, you know, places that do an amazing job of transporting us to just a different place, which is great for when we're there, but traveling back from theme parks. And I've noticed this as an adult, so if it happens to me, I can only imagine how it affects my ADHD child, but does it require any kind of special techniques or attention to get them back to their, you know, normal lives?
Yeah, I love this question, because when I was thinking about this question, I kept thinking about kind of the energy it takes for kids to be imaginative. Like these worlds, you know, that we go into that are so cool and so amazing and like light up a kid's face, right? They it's like you can get lost in it, like you said. And so it takes so much energy to pull out of that. So this, I just keep going back to like the needing rest thing when your kid doesn't even, they may not be physically tired, but I do think that when we shift out of something that's so engaging and imaginary, that it takes mental bandwidth and energy to shift back to something that's boring. And that's why we resist it, you know. I've written about how kind of the small version of this is when we ask our kid to stop playing and come to dinner. And they, if they struggle with that, that's like the mini version of this. And then the medium version is like Sunday night blues that we all feel like, oh, the weekend's gone. Yeah. Monday morning's coming. And then this is like the ultimate big transition of such fun down to, back to reality. So one thing to remember is, again, leaning into making those memories, you know, putting them together into something that child can go back to and look at.
And then
letting them help you organize that, because that can often help them buffer some of those feelings of, oh, well, I was in that imaginary world and now we have pictures of it. And then we can tell stories about it. The only other thing I will add, which is totally against our nature, is to downplay the vacation if you have a child who is pretty upset about leaving. And this is against our nature because we've probably spent a lot of money on our vacation.
Yeah,
and we want to be like, it was the best thing ever, wasn't it, guys? And we need like all this validation that we've done the best thing ever for our kids. A time will come for that. But it can actually backfire on us if we try to talk about how awesome it was and a kid is still sad about it being over. So we want to balance that timing. Probably a week later, they've moved on and we can talk about it more. But I always just caution parents to not, get too excited if they have a child that's really bummed about it.
Yeah. And that is tough because as a parent, have spent at Disney, you know, you spent so much money and you want them to be excited forever, but you're right. If they're bummed about it, you got to kind of put that aside, but that's easier said than done sometimes as a parent. Because you're just walking away with the bill, right? Like you've seen everything that you spent that week and you're like, kids better be excited about it. You know, you got to leave that behind.
Got to do it. Yep.
How can parents strike that balance between acknowledging the positive aspects of the vacation and avoiding the triggers, though, that could exacerbate their child's dysregulation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so definitely notice when they're tired or when they're hungry. I mean, we all know our kids, and we mm-hmm. know if you're nodding along as I say that, you're like, oh yeah, I'm not even going to try to engage in a conversation if my kid is hungry or tired. But sometimes kids are, you know, we think they're okay to talk about something, and then we realize they're grumpy, or we said too much, and that conversation kind of wasn't worth it at that time of day. So, you know, have those conversations sometimes when they're rested, when they're feeling, or when they've brought it up, like something about the vacation that they really liked. That's your window. That's your window to get it in and ask them something. So I would think about when your kid is interested in it, talk about it then, rather than when we bring it up. It's really, you know, roll the dice if they're going to be if they're going to be open to talking about it, if they care about it as much as we did. So listen for what they say and what they reflect on from the vacation, and try to find some balance in there with following their lead on what they're talking about. Fair enough. Always amazes me that, you know, the thing that they love is like not the thing we spent the most money on, like ever. Yeah,
the first time that we went to Disney. Oh my gosh. So, you know, Disney's all around. My kids wanting to spend time on the playground, which is the least impressive thing in the entire Disney World area. But that's what he wanted. And that's what he talked about after. And I'm like, what? We could have stayed home and did that, you know? So, all right. Well, I'm going to make, you know, a confession here. So when my ADHD child has trouble, you know, regulating his emotions, even when we're coming back from a vacation, I struggle to get, you know, he's in my mind. I've tried, even after we've talked several times, I still see it as him acting out. Right. Even though I know everything that you've said and, you know, trying to get that in my head, how do I flip the switch there, and what communication strategies, what approach should I use so I can be more supportive instead of worrying about, you know, being the disciplinarian?
Mm-hmm. So the first thing to ask is ask your child if they want you to fix something or if they just want you to listen.
Okay.
Usually they just want us to listen. And then that gives us a second to remember that, like, I want to react to this because it's making me mad, but they actually just want me to listen to them. Now, the other thing I will say is we are like hardwired for somehow, or we somehow got the message. I think it was from like 1950s testing on rats behaviorally or something, that we needed to immediately respond when a kid does something negative. But human behavior, we don't need to do that. The rats, we need to do that. But humans, like if a kid talks back to us or they're upset, you can talk to them hours later and still effectively make your point. And I think that is so important for us to understand when we are traveling in the car and everyone's exhausted, or when no one's picking up their stuff and you're trying to bring it all in, like whatever the moment is that is your trigger. Yeah. For some reason, we get the message as parents, and a lot of it is kind of traditional behavior patterns over time in our culture. We've gotten the message that we have to handle that right now, or we have lost control of the situation, which is not true. Our kids can absolutely learn from us. An hour later, 3 hours later, we have to bring it back up, and we have to, you know, remain consistent and follow through with it. But it's going to be much more effective when we are calm and we bring it up with them than with whatever's going to come out of our mouths when we're not calm. And now we are all humans and stuff. We're going to say stuff when we're upset, but we can repair that later and tell our kids, like, that was probably not the most helpful thing for me to say, and I was really frustrated, so let's try that again.
Yeah. Have you developed a parental shock collar to avoid those situations? My wife might be interested in that for me. She also might kill me, but if you come out with that, let us know for sure.
When you're in a parenting partnership of whatever kind, where one parent you can quote unquote be your shot caller by telling you just to pause. Can you just pause right now? The problem is when we're upset, it's hard to listen to our partner. Yeah. We get mad at them. So this is all complicated by family relationships and marital partnerships and all kinds of things. And there's nothing that brings out the stress like a bunch of tired, hungry people in a car.
Mm-hmm.
Where no one can walk away. So
because in your head, you know what the right, or at least sometimes you know what the right thing to do is. And like when she's right, sometimes mm-hmm. it makes me more angry. Well, I know she's
exactly.
right.
Exactly. So what you're describing, I mean, that I know this life well as a psychologist mother, like knowing is not the same as being able to do what I know.
Yeah.
And that's because our brain and our nervous system they are connected, but we have thoughts and we have gut reactions rooted in our nervous system that are from years and years of exposure to whatever in our life has happened to us. And those are the triggers that feel at those moments come out mm-hmm. that are usually fear-based or angry, when our anger is usually our fear that, you know, oh my God, my kid's never going to listen to me. And then one day they're going to be living under a bridge. Like that is not this moment, you know?
Right. Oh my goodness. Yeah. Well, and my wife often tells me that my ADHD child is the spitting image of me. And then later I'll realize, you know, the trouble that I had trying to regulate my emotions, that's what my kid's going through. So the understanding comes later. I wish it would come in the moment, but
well, it may never come in the moment, but that's the thing. It doesn't have to. I think that we do get the message that for some reason it's better for it to come in the moment. I mean, it's better for it to be kind of closer to the moment if we can, but right. it is absolutely effective and maybe even more powerful for you to come back later and say, look, I get that you were mad and couldn't regulate yourself because, hey, I couldn't either. So let's try not to talk to each other when we're both in that state because mm-hmm. nothing's going to get solved.
Yeah. And Rob, it would probably help if you would stop responding to your wife with, I know you are, but what am I? That might help things.
Well, sometimes I need to, you know, sometimes she, no, I'm just kidding. Just kidding.
All right. If you would you tell our listeners where they can learn more about your parenting course and basically all things Dr. Emily?
Absolutely. So you can go to learnwithdremily.com, and I have an online course for parents raising neurodivergent kids. So that being kids who are diagnosed with autism, ADHD, twice exceptional kids, which is gifted and learning disability, anxiety, all the things, and how that parenting journey is different. And then I also have lots of resources for teachers. If you happen to be a teacher, or if you know a teacher that you feel like would benefit from more education, I do professional development stuff for teachers as well. And so there's links on my website to my podcast and my blog and all the social medias. I'm on Facebook and Instagram. I quit Twitter.
Twitter's evil. I'm sorry. Twitter's evil. Nothing good happens on Twitter.
Now, I do follow you on Facebook.
Did I see that you're taking your show on the road this summer? Did I see that somewhere?
For teachers, yes.
For teachers, yeah.
For teachers, yep. So I'm doing some virtual summer workshops, and then I'm offering in-service trainings for teachers starting this summer into August. That's when teachers usually do professional development mm-hmm. training, preparing for the new school year. So I'm available locally in North Carolina. I will travel under certain conditions, so you can just contact me through my website for that.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming back on. I know that I feel scolded in a good way every time that we talk. I feel like I learn something every time. We appreciate you coming on.
This is great.
Thanks for having me and talking about this, because, you know, I believe in a big way that our kids grow so much when we travel with them, and they learn so much about the world, and it expands them in a way that I truly believe is an integral part of their development.
Right.
For sure. Thank you so much.
Hey, everyone. If you're ready to plan your next family vacation, call my dad. He would love to help you as a certified travel agent. He never charges a fee to help you plan your vacation. Email him at rjones@starstufftravel.com. Get started planning your vacation today.
That does it for this week's show. Next week, join us as we talk to Jay Menashe about the importance of taking the family vacation, even with all the professional pressures that exist. And please do us a favor and hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode. Till next time.
Thank you for listening to The Family Vacationer. Make sure and subscribe to hear more of Rob and Danny.